Hey, I'm Robert Schneider from the Apples in Stereo.
Heavy G, right?
And I'm Eric Allen from the Apples in Stereo.
So we all recently returned from South by Southwest, and that festival really has been good to this band in a lot of ways. You know, for example, you were signed to your, quote, new label with Mr. Wood, right? And you met him there, didn't you?
Yeah, we were actually playing some party with Camper Van Beethoven, and he was standing in the front rocking out and came up and started talking to us after the show, and just, I guess, Robert stayed in touch with him over the years.
We love Camper. We've had Camper on the show a couple of times.
Camper Van Beethoven are really incredible live. Like, they're, we saw them play at South by Southwest. We played with them, and they were great and very psychedelic.
You know, one of the members might show up tonight, because, you know, we've got a local Camper member in Berkeley, so.
Oh, Victor?
Yeah. Yeah, so you never know. They could show up tonight.
I love Camper Van so much. They're incredible.
They're fun.
God, man.
So this is...
They have a new album that came out like a year and a half ago.
Yes,
really great stuff. It's really great songs.
So this is the first album in 5 years and your fifth album. Tell me about that. So, Mr. Math, tell me about that equation, for starters.
Speaking of math, I just thought of something about Camper Van Beethoven. David, the lead singer, was a math major in college. I was very cool.
So, come on, hit me. Five years, fifth album. That's kind of an interesting equation in and of itself. This is the intro. We're going to get into deeper formulas soon.
Let's see. We worked very hard on this record. We wanted to take our time with it. And when we started writing the songs and practicing and learning the songs for the record, we decided that we weren't going to even sign to a new label. Our contract was up with Spin Art, our old label that we have been signed to since our first album. And we decided we were going to, you know, not even sign to a label or have any sort of deadline or anybody waiting for our record. And we were just going to take our time and try to make a really great record. So that didn't take all of the 5 years since our last record, but it did take about three. We toured intermittently. I mean, we toured quite a lot for our last album, Velocity of Sound. That probably took us a year and a half into the 5 years. And then, like, we all did different things. John's band, Jesse Bessie, put out a record. Eric plays in a jazz, prog jazz band. But I have a band called Ulysses, and I put out an album with that band and also did a solo album under the name Marbles, and then toured for the Marbles record. And we had quite a lot going on in the last 5 years, you know. Plus, you know, we did spend a good chunk of that recording this record. The thing is that usually the 1.5 or 2 years before your next record comes out, you're touring and you're writing that record on the road and you're recording it in some crammed little piece of time when you're able to, like, clear enough time to do it. And so that's how we've always done our records too. I mean, I write a lot of songs, and so, I mean, the Apples have, there are tons of songs that we'll introduce on tour and start playing, and we'll end up dropping it and never record it. Some great song, but, like, just doesn't cut, you know, make the cut.
The mist.
Yep. And so, so there's tons of, like, I'm sure if you, like, listen back through the years on people's cassette bootlegs or whatever, prior to their internet bootlegs, there's tons of Apple songs that, like, we've learned and played and recorded that we never recorded. So, this time, our whole cycle of touring and stuff was done, and we had written a whole batch of new songs and stuff, and none of those new songs, the only thing from that batch that is on the record is the guitar solo intro of Can You Feel It, and like the chorus of Seven Stars. Everything else on the record was written since we stopped touring for Velocity of Sound. Like, we had written a whole, you know, so we dropped all of the songs we had at the time, and a lot of better songs came up. We took a lot of time. We really wanted to make a really good, heavy, meaningful, psychedelic record. Anyway, does that answer your question?
And then some. Lots of guests on New Magnetic Wonder from Elephant Six. So tell me a little bit about the lineup.
Well, it's I guess when you look at the album and you see the list of guests, it looks like there's like 50 people in the room playing at all times, and it's really more of you know, Robert went down to Athens, Georgia, and recorded with Bill Doss, our keyboard player, did some overdubs down there, some members of the Olivia Tremor Control. So
that's why, and I was going to say, because you recorded them over the year, but there's lots of places it was listed as it was recorded. Brooklyn, Lexington, New York, Denver, Athens, Benton, the infamous Benton, Kentucky, where I'm sure that was just for the liquor alone. That was for the bourbon.
I'll tell you, Dennis, that it was not the whiskey, but Kentucky's number one cash crop that was more influential to me moving there. It's an agricultural product that is not necessarily sold in stores.
Neosinephrine.
Yes. Maybe so. I had we started this record in Brooklyn at a studio. Yeah, we started the record in Brooklyn, and but then I took the hard drive and traveled all over to different friends' studios and stuff, recording with them. Like Eric said, I went to Athens. I spent a couple of weeks with Bill Doss, who is one of my oldest friends, in Athens at his studio, recording with him and with other a lot of friends of ours dropped by. I spent a lot of time in Western Kentucky in Benton at my brother-in-law's house. My brother-in-law, Craig Morris, is in a band called the Ideal Free Distribution. Oh, dude, you'd really like them. I should get a record for you. Honey, do we have any? Okay, that's beside the point. This is an interview, sorry. Not a casual hangout.
You went back to Bryce, lots of vintage gear, and I read No Control Room. And as a result, the album really kind of has a purity out of a session that could have been done in 65. You know, with the addition of tracking, you know, it's kind of like you recorded it one way, but then what you did, you know, you did the combo punch. And I read that you, at some points, managed to confound even Digi Design by pretty much with 96 tracks blowing up Pro Tools. Is that pretty much? So I think what they need, and you know, I work with Pro Tools too, is, and Digi Design is right here, you know, just a few minutes from where we are. So I'm thinking maybe the Apples and Stereo edition of Pro Tools.
Okay.
Where you can take, we can take 96 tracks, get them on, you know, the ultimate hard drive the size of this room, and you're not screwed. What do you think?
It'll be like Spinal Tap with the amp that goes
right.
to 11.
Yeah,
we'll have Pro Tools that goes to 97 tracks.
Yeah.
It's like one more than
But seriously, do you think you're the first people in history to like literally blow that
bring to its
knees? Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Okay, well there's two angles. Number one, I'm certain that we're not. You know, like that you could chain 424 tracks together and get 96 tracks.
Right.
I'm sure ELO and Queen and
yeah,
I'm sure there's maybe not Queen, but you know, I'm sure that that's been done. So, I'm pretty sure it's not. And also, it's not like there's 96 tracks going on at all moments. There's songs that are very raw that were recorded live in one room and that's all that's there. Like a lot of Beautiful Machine or Skyway is like that. But there's also songs that have like say, you know, maybe there's a stereo wood block through an analog delay. Well, that's like four tracks and it just comes in on the chorus or something. You know, that's four tracks though out of 96. Well, anyway, in addition, we have equipment like Poltergeist that follows us around, and especially me in studios.
You know, if your band name fails, your next band, Equipment Poltergeist, has got some really good vibe to it.
Thank you. So like every studio I work in, I mean, I had a fully analog studio and my tape machine was constantly breaking down. Everything breaks. My guitar strings break every time I play guitar. Eric's bass amp always blows up.
So you break things.
Yes.
So you actually used the tape machine from McCartney 2.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
It was incredible. We recorded all of our tracks to that tape machine. It was a Studer 8 track. Now it's been converted to a 16 track, but it's the same tape machine and the same, eight of the inputs are the same. And we recorded from that and then ran all the tracks into Pro Tools live. Like we would be playing and it would be running onto the tape and then off the repro head into Pro Tools.
So
we got a really great sound. It's a great sounding tape machine. Whoa. I mean, yeah.
It's warm is what it is,
it's
right?
It's really warm and it's super crunchy. Yeah,
he's behind the scenes. He probably never did. You don't understand that he rented it. He's been renting it the whole time, and you just don't know it.
Right. No. What really happened was it was an 8-track, but he got a 9-track. He got a specially designed 9-track from Studer.
Right. There's another little thing on the tape head, and you just don't know it. I have a 5.5-year-old daughter, and the other day when I was listening to Apples and Stereo, she turned to me and said, "Daddy, I learned a lot from this song." And I figured out that I learned from Energy, and I figured out that I learned a lot from it. But what's amazing about so many of the songs on this album is they're impressive because these songs are beautiful, but they're, you know, Beautiful Machine too, they're ultra complicated. So, you know, what you've succeeded at doing is these are pop songs at their finest, and I'm a power pop guy. But then the level of sophistication that goes into them makes them wear really well, you know, because you know how you hear a pop song and you hear it on top 40 radio and you're like, oh, come on, I can't listen to this again. But your stuff just...
The hope is that they're going to play it on the radio and on TV and stuff, and that you are going to hear it every single place you go. So you want to make a song that'll stand up, and every time you hear it, it's something different. I hear Good Vibrations like 20 times a week in supermarkets and stuff, and yet every single time I hear it, something stands out about the wind chimes or the
something
different things. You know, there's always something. Yeah.
Something. Yeah.
So from your perspective, working in this lovely band, and you've been at it a little while, how obsessive is it, for example, to take cassette tracks, you know, using a single microphone and then 10 tracks of laughter you know, and how much of this is pre-planned and how much of this is experimentation?
I think not much of it's pre-planned. A lot of it's experimentation, but I think it really works. I mean, for me, I've listened to pop albums recently that were done completely on Pro Tools, and the first song I love, and the second song I like a little bit less, and then it just all sounds the same after a while. And I think with this album, you don't get that at all. It's incredible. I mean, it really is the best feeling to see people smiling, like almost laughing excitedly when they hear a song they want to hear, and singing along and jumping around. I mean, it just can't help but make you happy as well.
I feel like that on stage. I like look around and I see you guys and it sounds really good and all those harmonies and stuff. Your bass is really fat and the drums are like crashing and like I like can't help but like want to like dance around and sing along too, except for that I have to actually sing.
Right.
Yeah. I can't sing along because, you know.
Okay. So, speaking of which, I'm going to ask you a couple of things because I just can't get away with not doing this. My audience hasn't heard probably the story of the Ampex 16-track recorder and the equation that goes with that. So do me the short version of that, well, if there is one.
I'll start by saying that I love mathematics. I love it as much as I love music, and it's a similar feeling to me that I get off of it. And I'm similarly unskilled and yet try to still be creative and ambitious with it. I got interested in math when we were recording our album, The Discovery of a World Inside the Moon. We recorded our very first Apples recordings on 4-track cassette. Then we moved up to a 4-track reel-to-reel. When we recorded our first album, we got an 8-track reel-to-reel. We moved up and eventually we got a 16-track, 2-inch reel-to-reel, an Ampex MM1600. Wait, what is it, 1200, 16-track, MM1200, 2-inch 16-track, it's a vintage 16-track from 1972, the fattest, greatest-sounding tape machine ever made. It's even better than a Studer, some people would say. The problem is that the tape machine breaks down. For every one day it was running, it would be broken down for 2 days. I'm not exaggerating.
It's kind of like a typical touring van.
Yeah, exactly.
Any piece of equipment you've ever had.
You don't understand.
I mean, there is nothing like it. Nothing breaks down this often. It broke down literally for one day of recording. It would be down for 2 days, and I had to learn to solder. I had to acquire all these electrical engineering skills because I couldn't afford to pay the repairman to come down 3 times a week to repair our tape machine so we could keep recording, right?
You're a patient man, but you're a little obsessed. Has anybody told you that?
Yeah, I know. And so I'm not that patient. But, anyway, I had to learn to solder, and I started to read circuit diagrams for my 16-track, and so I started to, learn a little bit about, you know, what do these various symbols mean, and so on, and I got a book from Radio Shack called Basic Electronics, which I would recommend,
to everybody who needs Basic Electronics from Radio Shack.
Radio Shack is like a resource that there is not another store that's like that. Best Buy in Circuit City, there's nothing like that, and you can't do it, and you can't get, and you can't get what Radio Shack offers online either. I mean, you can technically go to RadioShack.com or whatever, I'm sure. Most Radio Shacks, you can go in there, you can still buy like reels of analog tape there. They won't even know have it, and they'll look under the counter, they'll be like, yes. Like Radio Shack still has like old stock and stuff. And it's like you said, like they have all this stuff. Radio Shack's a cool store because you can serve, it's self-service, you know?
I knew where this interview was going to go. The interview has now turned into a Radio Shack commercial.
So, okay, off of Radio Shack. The point is about the Radio Shack thing is that I had to learn about electronics, and there's this equation in electronic theory. It's the basic equation of electricity and electronic theory, which is that voltage equals current flow times resistance. And like, I saw this equation and I had algebra in high school and just sort of like some vague feeling of algebra came back to me. And as I gazed at this book and I was soldering and I was having to go buy these parts and try to get the tape machine to run. And I could be more creative and make more beautiful music. And I could hear the music coming through the speakers and there's these lights flashing and like my brain's flashing while I'm recording. And like, I had this like feeling like all of a sudden my entire world, everything that's beautiful and creative and magical to me, my friends, I record with my friends and my whole life was wrapped up in this equation, this very simple equation. And it just sort of like, I had never gotten a feeling for math like that before, that it's almost like this equation was the context in which I was creative and in which I had friends and in which I was growing up and I had found a place in the world, and it was like dictated by this, you know, voltage equals resistance times current flow. It was like incredible. And I've never gotten a feeling, you know, a mystical kind of like feeling, and it was amazing. And I started getting really interested in math, and
you got a new musical scale out of all of this, which has found its way into all the shorter tracks on the album, right?
Well, all of the tracks don't have the scale. There's only a few of the links.
But the link ones.
Yeah, it's a it's not a big deal. I just invented
it makes for a very interesting listening experience.
Yeah, it definitely does. I came up with a scale based on natural logarithms, which is a function. It's a simple function. It's sort of like the square roots. It's similar to square roots. It feels like square roots. And basically it associates 12 new pitches with the keys on the keyboard in an octave on the black and white keys.
So we've created a thing called a musical sandwich. And what that is two of your songs is the bread. And then you each pick four or five songs in between by other bands.
Okay, so for the first sandwich I would like to make is the first piece of bread will be our song Same Old Drag, and the second piece will be our song Can You Feel It, and in the middle of the pieces of bread we will have Sweet Talking Woman by ELO. When I was driving out to New York last fall to mix this album, my wife Marcy and I were driving in the car and I was listening to ELO's Greatest Hits, which is a staple right now in my life. And in fact, it was probably the number one biggest influence on this record, along with Brian Wilson's Smile.
And Marcy, how much do you like ELO's Greatest Hits? Okay, good, good. Actually, just checking here.
ELO, talking about ELO is what got us is what brought us together in the first place. We met, and I overheard her telling somebody how much she loved Mr. Blue Sky, and she was so beautiful, and I was like, oh my God, this beautiful girl loves Mr. Blue Sky. Okay, point is this. So back to the
sandwich. She's turning red here.
So I was driving out to New York with Marcy, my wife, to mix the album. Most of the recording was finished, and we were basically we were listening to ELO's Greatest Hits, and Sweet Talking Woman came on. And at the end of the song, Jeff Lynne does this thing where he pulls out all the instruments of the mix except for like some backing vocals and the bass drum. It's just for like one pass in the last chorus. It's like a repeated chorus, and for half of the repeated chorus, he pulls out all the instruments. So it's like a dance break, disco era, and and it's the greatest production trick. It does the chorus, then there's a dropout, and then the song comes back in for the final time around. And I was like, that's an incredible production trick. I need to do it. I've got to do it on one of the songs. And so right away, as soon as I thought of that, I realized that it would work perfectly with Same Old Drag. And so as you listen to the last chorus of Same Old Drag, you'll hear the dropout. You'll hear the pull down. I didn't do the exact same pull down, but I did it in the same place in the song, but I didn't use the same exact instrumentation as the ELO song, but I used their exact trick. And I liked it so much, I woke up the next morning after we mixed the song, and we had started mixing Can You Feel It, and I liked the trick so much that I woke up the next morning and I realized that we needed to do it again. Jeff Lynne did it the first time, but we did it twice on the Apples and Stereo. I'm a vegetarian and Eric's not, so why don't you we put a vegetarian song inside the sandwich, dude? like something that's not by Ted Nugent.
Got a good song. I'm pretty sure this is a vegetarian song, but it's definitely a beautiful song. The Warmth of the Sun by the Beach Boys. It's just one of those songs that kind of, it makes you sad a little bit, makes you hopeful a little bit, but it also, there's something about it that's a little bit spacey and kind of relaxes me and kind of makes you dream. Okay. And I don't know how that works with food.
Good morning, off of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. That one, the groove of Same Old Drag is definitely kind of the feel of that song, I feel like. And also I would say Billie Jean by Michael Jackson. I actually tried directly to steal the exact same drum and bass feel, even though it's not exactly the same.
I got another one, Lucifer Sam by the Pink Floyd. Because we've got to have our sandwich's got to have a little bit of bite and a little bit of spice, and
a little bit of LSD.
Those are the mushrooms on the sandwich.
Okay.
I can't wait to see what restaurant's serving this thing and what they're gonna call it.
Can we have on the side of the sandwich, not inside of it, on the side?
This is like the potato salad.
Like the potato salad, except for I'd like to put a fruit. Yes. I'd like to put a fruit side.
Nice.
Apples and Oranges by the Pink Floyd, the most psychedelic song ever recorded, and we actually named our band after the song.
Oh, there you go.
Taking Care of Business by BTO. When we were recording our second album, Tone Soul Evolution, I would wake up every morning hours before everybody else because I was excited to record, except for I would wake up hours before the engineer, too. We slept at the studio, on the floor of the studio, and I would wake up and I'd go in another room with this little portable record player, and I had the 7-inch for Taking Care of Business, and every morning I would just wake up and I'd listen to that over and over again, and I would also listen to Use Me Up by Bill Withers.
Okay,
that would be another one. Yeah, yeah.